So, my father.
Shizeha Bechor. This is the firstborn. Of course, referring to Menashe. Sim Yamincha Arosha. Place your right hand on his head. Vayimain Aviv, and his father refused. Vayomer, and he said, Yodati v'ni Yodati. I know my son, I know. Gam hu yihiya la'am. He too will be as a nation. V'gam hu yigdol. And he too will become great. V'ulam, however. Achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu. His younger brother will become greater than him. V'zaro yihiya melo hagoyim. And his descendants will fill all the nations. Okay, so those are the few psukim that are being quoted here that our midrash is going to be going on. Dalet. Vaya Yosef ki yashis aviv et cetera. If anybody needs a photocopy, they're right on the back table there. A few steps to this midrash. And as we go through it, we will go through the first few ideas without explaining the concepts, and then we'll come back and explain the concepts. Omar Rabbi Bracha, Rabbi Brachia said, Yedah di dechas tilisa'a da'alma. Yaakov is now speaking to Yosef, and he says, this hand, which has pushed aside one-third of the world, ad mevakesh lidchosa, you're trying to push it away? So in other words, Yaakov is saying, my hand pushed away one-third of the whole world, and you're trying to push away my hand? That's the first mystery of the Midrash. Still in the Midrash, Vayomer Yosef el Aviv. Yosef said to his father, Lo chein avi, it's not so the way you have it. Vayimain aviv, Vayomer yadati b'ni yadati. His father refused, Yaakov. He said, I know, my son, I know. So what does he mean when he says, I know? Yadati ma'asei re'uvenu bilha. I know what happened with Reuven and Bilhah when it says that he switched the beds there. Umase Yehuda v'Tamar. I also know what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. Ma devorim shelo niskalu lucha niskalu li. Things which were not revealed to you, those two things, Reuven and Bilhah, Yehuda and Tamar, things which were not revealed to you were revealed to me. Devorim sheniskalu lecha al achas kama v'kama. The things that you do know, that are revealed to you, certainly all the more so I know them. So Yaakov is saying to him, the things you don't know, you're not aware of, I am aware of. So all the more so the things that you are aware of, I'm aware of. This is very mysterious. What's he talking about? What's he saying? What's he alluding to? So now we'll take a look at the Eitz Yosef commentary on the right side of the page, and it starts from the top where the arrow is. It says letter Dalet, also says letter Vav. So the first thing that Yaakov says to Yosef is, Yedah, didachis tilisoi da'ama. This hand which has pushed aside one-third of the world, and you're trying to push it aside. Kolomar, meaning, Shebevo'o lidchos koach yado. When Yosef was coming to try to move aside the power of his hand, and one of the Mefarshim says here that Yosef was physically trying to move Yaakov's hand. Omar le'avi, so his father said to him, Yodi shehoyisa doche v'notzach hamalach. This is the hand which fought against the Malach, meaning the Malach of Esav that Yaakov had defeated earlier in his life. Shehu shalish shel olam. And a Malach is one-third of the world, which we'll see about. We don't know what that means yet. Atamavakesh lidchosa, so you're trying to push it away. Because so we have our first insight. What did Yaakov refer to? He's talking about when he defeated the Malach. And this hand defeated a Malach, and you're trying to push it away. Valze Omar. So therefore, Yosef said to him, Lo kein avi. No, this is not so, father. Ki eneni mevakesh lidchos yadcha bekoach. I'm not here to try and physically force your hand. That's not where I'm coming from. Ela mitzad hayosher. I'm just coming to do what's right. There's something that's not right about this. So it's not a question of physical force, but there's yashrus here. Ki chok hayosher hu shelo lidchos habachur mibnei hatzoir. Because it is only yashur, it's only right that the older should not be pushed aside due to the younger. A theme that goes at the multi-generational theme in the Torah with all these previous generations. So he says to him, no, Father, it's not a question of I'm trying to physically move you. I want you to know that he's the older, he's the younger. The Bechor should not be pushed aside for the younger. V'Yaakov lo chashash lidavarav. But Yaakov was not concerned about Yosef's words, meaning he did not give them credence. Lefi sha'asa kein beruach hakodesh. Because he was acting with ruach hakodesh right now. And that's a little bit about what he's telling him. I know. Yaakov says, I know who's who here. Things you don't know, I know. Certainly things you do know, I know. So he's doing this beruach hakodesh. That's why I'm not moving my hand. Now let's take a look at the next one. Yodati ma'asei Reuven. So he says to him, I know what happened with Reuven and Bilhah. I know what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. Why two things? So the Eitz Yosef says, Deim lo kein yodati yodati lamali. Because why does the Torah use the word yodati twice? Apparently he's referring to two separate incidents. He could have just said, yodati b'ni. I know my son. But he says, yodati b'ni yodati. That's two things he knows. And that's why the Midrash says, Reuven and Bilhah and Yehuda and Tamar. Now, before we see the next Eitz Yosef, the next two, first I want to mention this. So Yaakov is saying to him, the things that you don't know about, I know. Certainly the things that you do know about, I know. Al-Derech HaPshat, he's saying, you know that Menashe is the Bechor. That's known to you. Kol Shekein, I know. So just in a very straightforward way. You know he's the Bechor, so of course I know. I know things that you don't know. I know this as well. But the Eitz Yosef has a different mahalach in that, and he goes as follows. Yodati ma'asei Reuven, Ritzon Olamar, meaning to say, Sheyakov yada binevua sheruven lochata. Yaakov knew through prophecy that Reuven did not sin. Now the Torah says there that Reuven slept with Bilhah. It didn't mean that. It means he changed around the bed, that he put Yaakov's bed, took it out of Bilhah's tent into his mother's tent, Leah, because after Rachel died, Yaakov moved his bed to Bilhah, and Reuven thought that was an insult to his mother, Leah. So he moved the bed from Bilhah's tent to Leah's tent. And that was considered to be a very serious Avera. The way the Torah describes it is that Reuven slept with Bilhah. Now that's not what happened. However, this Eitz Yosef says that there was an inclination in Reuven to do that. And when it says, Sheruven lo chata, commando Omar beperek bame behema, this goes according to the opinion in the Gemara Shabbos in that perek, Shebikesh Reuven lachto velo chata. That Reuven was thinking about it. He was thinking about that chay, but actually sleeping with Bilhah, but he overcame his Yetzer Hara and he didn't. That's a very private matter. How would anybody else know that? Well, Yaakov knew that through Nevuah. So he knew that something happened with Reuven, that he had a desire for Bilhah, and he was able to be Kovesh Es Yitzro. Shekovash Yitzro Bishas Maisa. That he overcame his Yetzer Hara at the time of the Maisa. So it could very well be, I'm just suggesting this, that both of these really go together. That what really happened is that Bilhah I'm sorry, Reuven switched Yaakov's bed from Bilhah's tent to Leah's tent. That's how everybody understands that. At the same time, what appears to be is that he also had a machshava, a thought, a desire for Bilhah. And Yaakov knew that, and he also knew that Reuven overcame that. V'chein, likewise, yada b'ma'ase Yehuda. He also knew about what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. What did he know? Shehamalach shel hataiva hitahu. That the angel of taiva, of desire, compelled Yehuda. Now, one of the opinions there, when Yehuda was with Tamar, a lot said about that. One of the opinions is that Yehuda did not have Bechira at that moment, because that relationship had to happen in order for those children to be born, because that's the lineage of Mashiach. That's where Mashiach comes from. So min hashamayim, that relationship had to occur. So the way that's expressed by our Chachamim in an earlier Midrash is that the Malach of Taiva compelled Yehuda to be with Tamar, and he had no Bechira. So Yaakov Avinu was saying, and I know about that too. So I know through Nevuah that Reuven was Kovesh his Yetzer not to be with Bilhah. And I also know that when Yehuda was with Tamar, that that was through something that was not Bechira related. He was compelled by Amala. Not everybody says that, but that's what the Eis Yosef is saying here. So those are the two things that no one else would ever know, but Yaakov knows them through Nevuah. Okay, now the next Eis Yosef, how does that apply to this situation? What does that have to do with what's happening here? So he says, Ma devorim shelo niskala lecha niskalu li. Yaakov says to Yosef, things that you're not aware of are revealed to me. Devorim sheniskalu lecha, things which are revealed to you, certainly they are revealed to me. Which is, hainu mechirasecha, that you were sold by your brothers. I know about it. Now, that means to say that Yaakov Avinu was now informing Yosef for the very first time, right before he's about to die, I know what happened. I know your brother sold you. Now, this question came up, I think, maybe last week. Did Yaakov ever really know? My recollection is that some say Yaakov never knew, that he was not told. That's my recollection. But the Eitz Yosef says here that his pshat is, he's talking about the Mechira. So why does he introduce that? Why is it important here? This is why. Ki Yosef, l'masha ro'a masha nimshach lo mikinas echav bo. Yosef saw what happened as a result of his brother's jealousy toward him. He knew what happened to himself. Al ahavas aviv oso mehem. In that his father showed more love to him than the other Shvatim. So Hoya Makpid, now Yosef was Makpid, he was concerned and careful. Bihiyoso Matil Kina ben Menashe ve'Ephraim. He didn't want the same thing to happen over again. I don't want to place jealousy between Menashe and Ephraim. So he's saying to his father, you know, he's the older one, but Yosef's thinking, okay, my father doesn't know my brother sold me. Doesn't know anything that happened, so I can't say anything, but I do need to tell him that he's the Bechor, because placing the younger in front of the older can cause jealousy, like happened to me. That's what he's thinking in his mind. Bahodio chiba yisera lukata, by making known more love to the younger one here, you're going to cause jealousy. V'chashav ki lo yada Yaakov mizesha machruhu. And Yosef thought that Yaakov didn't know that he was sold by his brothers. V'lo omar lo Yaakov, sorry, v'lo ze omar lo Yaakov. So therefore Yaakov says to him, She'im nistar mimcha noda li. The things, my dear son, that you don't know, I know. Kol shekein ha-mechira shenoda lecha. Certainly the sale that your brothers sold you, that you do know about it, I know about that too. But nonetheless, I'm going to do this because he's doing it Beruach HaKodesh. So he's saying to Yosef, I know all about what happened. I know what kina can do. I know what jealousy can create. I know you were sold down to Mitzrayim. Nonetheless, I know what I'm doing, and my hand goes on Ephraim, not on Menashe. That's what he's saying to him, according to the Eitz Yosef. Just one sec. Now, we have one addition. What about the Cherem? Right, that oath that they all told, that no one could tell. So the Eitz Yosef says, Va'afal pi shecherimu, they made a Cherem, a very solemn oath, shelo legalos, not to reveal this sale, the shitfu es Hashem beinehem, and Hashem was included in that Cherem. God himself was not permitted to tell. So how did God tell Yaakov? Yaakov knew it through Nevuah. That means God told him, but God wrote the Cherem? He says no. Kishanim se Yosef hitiru ha-Cherem. When Yosef was found in Mitzrayim and the brothers knew, Ani Yosef, the Cherem was released. So they didn't say anything about it at that point. They didn't tell anybody, but the Cherem was released, and now Hashem told Yaakov, be Nevuah, what had occurred. So all this is happening right there as Yaakov does this, you know, seek Heles Yadav, and in this second or two of conversation, all of this is going on, and he's revealing to Yosef that he knows what happened, and don't worry, I know what I'm doing, this is done Beruach HaKodesh. So it's hard, kind of hard to say to a Navi like Yaakov Avinu, maybe you're not aware of this, right? Rabbi Sin, you had a comment there? Yeah.
Well, this was, what was the relevance of him telling him about Bilha and Reuven and Yehuda and Tamar? I understand the relevance of telling him that he knows what, that he's worried that there's going to be a bad outcome from Pina, but why is he revealing that to him?
I don't know why. I don't know why he couldn't have just said in general. Why does he have to say? Maybe it's to convince Yosef. Here's two examples of something that you don't know about that I do. So it's a very convincing statement. But it's hard for me to see that, because why does Yaakov have to convince Yosef about what he says? Right? He's Yaakov Avinu. So maybe it gave extra force to what he was saying. But it's a little hard for me to understand why Yaakov, similar question, had to say specifically those two cases.
I mean, all these different contexts, but Reuven was Kovesh. So
his
Yosef is celebrated. He has a similar situation. I mean, he thought about it clearly.
With Ashes Potiphar. Right.
And he's celebrated, and Reuven is condemned and loses his position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ilana,
was
your head?
But was he just alluding to this, or did he actually tell Yosef?
Lechora, he alluded to it.
It
could be he didn't tell him. Right, it could be. But still, why does he even have to say that? Right. Why does he even have to say, I know what happened with Reuven? Why can't he just say, I know things that you don't know, and then proceed?
Well, maybe he did say that, but the Mefarshim was saying what he's alluding
to. No, it says, Yodati Masa Reuven Ubili. Yodati Masa Yehuda V'Tamar. So he said those words. Maybe he didn't elaborate, but he still said those words. Yeah. Aviva, your hand was up before. About the Cherem?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, how he knew that at the end, once
the Cherem was released, then Hashem was, quote-unquote, permitted to tell Yaakov about what happened, and he did, the Derech Nevuah. So all this is going on here. And we still didn't answer the question yet about a Malach being one-third of the world, which we'll get to in a second. Elka, yeah, please.
I guess I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is, if each person is given a certain Nevuah, let's say, then it doesn't really have to, I don't understand that Yaakov generalization, like, because I know all these things, and you don't, therefore, because I thought Hashem gives certain people certain Nevuahs, and it doesn't affect how many other people know,
right,
or anything. So.
Right, that's usually how we understand it, and that comes up when we find out a few parshas earlier in the Torah that Yitzchak Avinu knew that Yosef was in Mitzrayim and his son Yaakov is suffering. So Rashi says, why didn't Yitzchak tell Yaakov? Yitzchak said, if Hashem didn't tell him, then I can't tell him. Mm-hmm. So that's how Nevi'im work. So you're right, and that is what we would expect. But apparently, for whatever reason, maybe so Yaakov would have an even greater, you know, appreciation for his sons, Hashem let him know things about other people's lives. That's not a given. What you're saying is correct. It's not a given. So that's perhaps why Yaakov is saying to Yosef, look, I want you to know that there are certain things that I know that you don't know, and Hashem is telling me these things. Because it's relevant now. It's relevant in terms of how he puts his hands on the two sons. And normally you would not expect that to happen. But Yaakov's nevuah is either so broad that it's not typical, even for nevuah, or that Hashem wanted to reassure him that his sons are tzaddikim, and this is what happened here, this is what happened there. So he's given the zechus to know that. It's not quite as gentle, right? So he says, the Lushan is Lochein Avi, right?
It's not like
this that. This is not so,
it's
right?
Very, like
sounds a little stronger, right? A little firmer, right?
Not coveted. But
so
we're supposed to say, like, is it possible, Father, that you put your hand in the wrong place?
Right. Yeah, it is. I agree. It does sound a little strong from Yosef. But I want to address the other side from that for a minute, from a machshava that I've had over the years. There's an unusual word here that when Yaakov tries to move Yosef's hand, it says, Vayismoch, and he supported his hand. Lehasir osa, in order to remove it. So why doesn't it say he lifted it or he moved it? Why does it say Vayismoch? The word Vayismoch is tamicha, that means to support. Tom Chei Torah, Tom Chei Shabbos, you're supporting. So I think it's like this. This is a situation in the Torah where one person has to correct another person. Yosef has to correct his father as to who's the firstborn. So how does he do it? In a supportive way. As he's telling him this is not correct, he's doing it b'derech tamicha. He's supporting him. Vayismoch Yad Aviv. So the lesson is that whenever we have to correct another person, we have to do that in a way which also provides them support. We can't just lay somebody out on the carpet. It has to be done with tamicha. Now Kol Shekein, a son who's addressing his father, has to speak in a proper way. So I'm looking at it from the other angle, Elka, that word is suggesting there's something very supportive about what Yosef is doing, because it's not a typical word. Okay, now what about the one-third part of the Mav? So it says in the Midrash earlier, in the Midrash Rabbah, when Yaakov Avinu has the dream in Parshas Vayetze about the ladder, the Sulam. So it says that V'hineh malach Elokim olim v'yordim bo, that malachim of Hashem were going up and down the ladder. So the Midrash says there were four malachim, two going up and two going down. How do they get that? Because it says malachim plural, and miyud rabim shnayim. The minimum number of plural is always two. That's a rule in the Torah. So there were two going up, two going down. That's four malachim. The Midrash says over there that Hashem showed Yaakov the whole world plus a third. The whole world plus a third. How do we get that? Because a malach is one third of the world. If there are four malachim, that's four thirds. So therefore, he showed him the world plus a third. Very unusual, mysterious midrash earlier. Now, how do we see that a malach represents a third of the world? So over there, it quotes a pasuk from Daniel. And Daniel is describing malachim, and he says their body is like Tarshish. Tarshish is a gemstone, and it looks like the ocean. It looks like the sea. So when it says the body of the malach is like the ocean, it means to say it's like It's like the ocean in this way, that the Chachamim say that the world is composed of three-thirds. Shulish Mayim, it's one-third water. Shulish Yishuv, one-third populated, civilized areas. Shulish Midbor, one-third desert and empty, desolate areas. So we see the ocean is one-third of the world. A malach is compared to an ocean because its body is Tarshish. So therefore, a malach is one-third of the world. That's the reason, that the logic that the Midrash uses over there to show that a malach is one-third. Now, over here on the bottom, there's one more. If you take a look on the bottom of your page, where it says, Eshed HaNecholim, that commentary, that perush on the bottom, where the check is by the letter Dalet, right side of the page. Yoda Dedachis. So Yaakov says, my hand which pushed aside one-third of the world. Im Natsachti Es HaMalach Shehu Shalish Olam. If I, or being that I, was able to vanquish the Malach who's one-third of the world. Ki HaOlam Bichlolo Nechlak L'Gimel Chalakim. Because the world is divided into three sections. What are they? Olam HaMalachim, one-third is the world of angels. V'olam HaGalgalim, one-third is the world of planets and constellations. Olam HaShafel, and one-third is our world, Earth. V'im Kain, Olam HaMalachim Hu Shalish. And therefore the world of Malachim is one-third. So that's the pshat of the Eshed HaNecholim. A malach is one-third of the world, meaning there are malachim, galgalim, and earth. One-third of that is malachim. That's what it means. A malach is one-third of the universe or one-third of the earth. So two different pshatim, either because his body is like the ocean and the ocean is one-third, or like he says over here. Ilana, a question?
What does it mean, the body is like the ocean?
It's described there, a pasuk from Sefer Daniel, that the body of the malach is like Tarshish. Mm-hmm. And Tarshish is a gemstone which has the color of the ocean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so therefore they make the connection that a malach's body is compared to the ocean. What that means, I don't know. But that's the connection that they make. Yeah. Revison, you had your hand up before? Mm-hmm. Sure? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Please, Mrs. Schumann, yeah.
Pete, what you said, there were these three sections. The first is the malachim.
Okay. Yeah, so there's Olam HaMalachim, the world of angels. Olam HaGalgalim, the world of planets and constellations. And Olam HaShafel, which means the earth. So those are three divisions of reality. One-third of that division is Malachim, is angels, and therefore a Malach is one-third of the universe. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So how come if there was a Cherem, that Yitzchak had been there?
How did he know, right?
Right.
So it must be that he knew. I'm thinking two thoughts. Either he knew before the Cherem was done, or else, that's not correct. I was going to say he figured it out, but it says he knew it b'derech nevuah. So that can't be correct. Maybe before the Cherem was placed in, he was informed.
But then you see, each father knows more than the son.
Each father knows more than the son, right? We got to tell that to our children. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yeah, Elka, please.
This last point about the third reality.
Mm-hmm.
Angels are not physical, but when we say one-third, 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 the other two-thirds are physical.
Right.
So it's such a kind of bizarre situation mm-hmm. that I can't actually wrap my head around.
Right, we can't. But it's total reality, right? Total reality, physical, spiritual. You have this third over here, these two-thirds over there. But yes, you can't take spirituality and put a fraction on a 33.3%.
Right. No, right,
yeah, one part of three, you could say, perhaps, yeah.
But that what you're saying is important, because if you were just looking at the physical world, I think they said water covers like 70% of the Earth's surface.
It's a lot.
So it's including more than the physical world, that division of thirds. I mean, clearly
mean?
Because...
because water is more than a third?
Right. Yeah. So,
I don't know why they call Chaim a third.
I guess what she's saying.
It could also mean not literally one third. It could mean that there are three parts. You know, it could be three parts. One part angels, one part Galgalim, one part land or earth. Could be that. But I'm not sure. Say it again. Well, the Malachim is certainly referring to something spiritual. But the Galgalim in Olam HaShuffle would not be. That would be something physical. Olam HaShuffle means earth, you know, our lower physical world.
But could it be that the angels in that sense are, let's just say that one third of reality is a spiritual reality?
I don't know. Also, there's a lot more spiritual reality than angels, too.
Exactly.
So for some reason, they're not being included here, and I don't know why. Yeah. There's kochos, right, that we learn in the Rambam many times, so I'm not sure why that's not part of this. Yeah, please.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
How does that pertain to what Yaakov was telling Yosef about how he knows?
So that part doesn't. That part pertains to the first thing he said when he said, "You're trying to push away my hand by force. This is the hand which defeated one third of the world." That was the first part of that. Then the second part is the what you know and what he knows. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Another question is that, like, if it was going to be like a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
I moved that stone. I mean, you're going to try to push my hand. I moved that stone that all those people couldn't do. So
I guess it was a greater feat of strength to defeat the Malach, the Sar Shal Esav, than to move that stone.
Well, right. I mean, I think it's the spiritual and physical's vision.
Yeah. In other words, that would have been a physical thing, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I hear that. Okay, now the second part of the Midrash. Okay, we're back in the Midrash, and it says the Gamhu Yihya Lo'am, the Gamhu Yigdol. He too will be a nation, and he too will be great, but his younger brother will be greater than him. So the Midrash says, Ve'efshar Kain, is that possible that Ephraim will fill the entire world? Is that really what that means? So just move over to the left, where I circled Gamhu Yigdol. What does that mean? Sefer Dikra, this is the end of the Pasuk. Vizaro Yihya Melo HaGoyim, and his descendants, his offspring, will fill the entire nations of the world. Vizehu Sheshoel, that's what the Midrash is asking. Efshar Kain, is that really possible? Sheyihyu Kol Kach Beribui Ubamakom, that Ephraim would be so numerous and in so many places? Shelo Nimsa Kain B'Tanach. He says, you don't find that in Tanakh. Not just making an observation, but we don't find in Tanakh that Ephraim filled the whole world. The Doresh im Eino Inyan al Miluam. Okay, so then it's going to give the answer. So that's what the Efshar Kain means. We don't find such a thing that Ephraim filled all of reality. Ella, what does it mean back in the Midrash? Ze Yehoshua. He's referring to one person, Yehoshua ben Nun, who's a descendant of Ephraim. He's from Shevet Ephraim. Shahu madmim galgal chama ulavana, that he silenced the sun, literally the sphere of the sun and the moon. He made it still. He stopped the sun in the sky. Shehein sholtin misofa olam viad sofo, and they rule, the sun and the moon, they rule from one end of the world to the other. So one person, your descendant Ephraim, Yehoshua ben Nun, is going to do something that will fill the whole world. He's going to stop the sun in its tracks, and the entire world will take notice of that. That's what he's talking about. And what does that refer to? Amar Rebbe Yitzchak, he just quotes it in part here. This is what Yehoshua said to the sun. Abda Bisha, you are a bad, disobedient servant. He says to the sun, he's in the middle of a battle. He wants there to be more daylight so he can finish the battle and defeat his enemies. Once it turns dark, they're going to get away. So he says to the sun, you need to stop. And apparently, initially, the sun didn't listen. So Yehoshua said, Avda Bisha, you're a disobedient servant. Lav zavine da'aba at, you are my ancestor's possession. Who's his ancestor? Yosef. Why? Because Yosef had a dream, and what happened in his dream? The sun bowed down to him. Amazing, right? So Yeshua says to him, you are my ancestor. He has you in his pocket. You bow down to him. You have to listen to me. So as a result of that, the sun stood still in the sky. Let's take a look at the bottom there. Matnos Kahuna. Where it says that. Oh, I'm sorry. I must have seen it somewhere else. But what he says there is that the Hishtachavoya, it was the bowing of the sun to Yosef in his dream that earned the sun as property, you might say, that he owns it. Yosef now owns the sun. And that's what Yeshua said to the Chama. Now, maybe we would be the descendants of Yosef, and we would try saying this, right? So it's not just that the zechus of Yosef, Yeshua had to be a pretty big person because he said it and the sun listened. Right? Anybody can say it.
I try saying it every Friday afternoon.
Every Friday afternoon you're trying to say that, right? Just doesn't seem to work. So the zechus of Yosef and the zechus of Yeshua ben Nun, the descendant of Ephraim. So that's who he's talking about. That's who Yaakov is talking about when he says his descendants will fill the world. He's talking about Yeshua. Now, one more fascinating midrash, which I want to read for you, which is much earlier in the Torah, and it's talking about Parshas Vayeshev. Oh, the same dream. I'll read it out for you. Vayachalom od chalom acher. Yosef has another dream, and this is the dream of the sun and the moon bowing down to him. And he says it over to Yaakov. He tells Yaakov the dream, and Yaakov knows that it's true. It's a nevuah. B'sho'a sho'omar Yosef, when Yosef said to Yaakov, V'hine ha'shemesh v'hayareach, and the sun and the moon bow down to me, Omar Yaakov, so Yaakov said to Yosef, Mi gila lo sheshmi shemesh, who revealed to my son Yosef that my name is sun, shemesh? Who told Yaakov my name is Shemesh. Now, where do we get that? Where do we get that Yaakov's name is Shemesh? So the Mefarshim say, because when Yaakov Avinu got to that place, it says, Vayolen Shom Kiva HaShemesh. He lied down there to go to sleep because the sun was coming, meaning the sun was setting. The Mefarshim say that ki vo hashemesh is what the malachim were saying to each other. They said, the sun is coming. Who were they referring to? Yaakov Avinu. Became a song later in history called Here Comes the Sun. Right? So the sun is coming. Ki vo hashemesh. Who's that? Yaakov. Yaakov is the Shemesh. Also interesting, when Yaakov has his wrestling match with the Sar Shel Esav, and he's healed by what power? The sun. If the sun comes on, the healing powers of the sun, of course Hashem is doing that, the healing powers of the sun bring Yaakov refuah shlema. So that matches up. He's the Shemesh, and therefore he's healed by the powers of the sun after that wrestling match with Esav. So all of these connections come together. He knows my name is the sun because kivo hashemesh, that's what happened to me. Therefore, this nevuah that he had must be true. And here it's quoted more in full, so I'll just read the whole thing. Yeshua, later in history, says to the sun, Avdo Bisha, disobedient Eved, Lav Zvinas Kaspe de Abo At, aren't you the monetary acquisition of my ancestor of Yosef? Lo kach ro'o abo osach v'chalom. Didn't my ancestors see you in a dream? And it said, v'hine ha'shemesh v'hayareach, and behold, the sun and the moon bound out. Didn't you know that? That you are the possession of Yosef? Af at dom milafonai. So be still in my presence. And miyad, it says, therefore in Sefer Yehoshua, Vayidom Hashemesh v'yoreach amad. The sun was still and the moon stood in its place. Okay. Are there any questions on Elka? Yeah, please. A lot of questions, yeah. Yeah. The question is, what is going on, right?
Different people have different ideas about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's their ideas.
It's all Torah Sheba'al Peh. Midrash is Torah Sheba'al Peh. These are the Chachamim. Same Chachamim in the Mishnah and the Gemara. These are Chazal. It's all Torah Sheba'al Peh. This is Mesorah. These are drashos that they have. And they understand, and they're informing us a little bit more of the picture, a little more, another perspective. And each one is MS, each perspective is MS. And they're trying to fill out the picture, what's happening in the Torah for us, from the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Yeah.
So even if they're contradictory?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Midrashim contradict, we're okay with that. Because Midrashim are not necessarily literal. So therefore, if one contradicts the other, it's not like two things in open contradiction to each other. We have to resolve it. We have to understand it. We have to try and understand it if we can. But we're not worried about the fact that it says two very different, even oppositional things. It's not necessarily literal. Some Midrashim are literal, but other Midrashim are not.
Is there a way of knowing which ones are
the... You have to look at the Meforshim and see how they understand, you know, what's being said here, how they understood that. When it says Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos high, that's not a literal midrash. That's a concept that he was 10 amos high. And he jumped 10 amos, and he used a stick that was 10 amos in order to hit Og on the ankle and kill him. Those are concepts about the number 10. That's not literal. So we know that from the way they are explained and the way they are interpreted by our Meforshim. Now, this to me appears literal. It appears literal that when Yaakov says, Yodati b'ni, Yodati, that he filled in those two words from the Torah with more words that the Midrash states here. I know what happened with Reuven and Bilhah. I know what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. That's just not just a concept. He's letting him know something here. And Yeshua saying that to the son, to me that appears to be literal. That he said to the son, you are owned by my ancestor Yosef, and therefore you have to stop for me. Yeah. Yeah, please, Yolanda.
So it seems like there's two Midrashim saying one's literal and one's more just not literal. But
there are two ways. Not two separate Midrashim, but two...
Okay, two different types.
Yeah, exactly.
But
Probably because they darshan psukim. Right? Midrash is the lashon of derush. When you're darshaning psukim, you're going to call that midrash. You're pulling something out from a pasuk. You're extracting something from the usage of words and comparisons from one pasuk to another. That's derusha. That's not pshat. It's not pshat. It's derusha, so we call it midrash. They can. You're saying other midrashim?
What you read with the Chumash, not Rashi, literal, but the other Meforshim also do that, but they're called...
Perushim. Yeah. Similar. They're extracting through reason and through insight. They may even be pulling on the Chazal. They often do. But in strict terms, that to take psukim and work with them and pull something out of them, in strict terms, that's called derush. Perush is a general word for explanation. I'm explaining something, and it could be through any number of ways that they're explaining something. Yeah, please, Mira. Yeah.
So what do we get? Like, what do we receive from this that, like, expands something for us?
Well, just I can speak for myself. It gives me a further and deeper appreciation of some of the stories that are happening in the Torah and the people who we are speaking about and their greatness and some of the under-the-surface events that were going on. It opens up our eyes as to what's truly occurring in the Torah. And then to apply that to our own life, that, of course, is something we always have to strive to do, how to apply it to our own life. Yeah.
It's like honoring one's father. Is like, I mean, that's what I, like Yaakov reminds him, like, you know, like I'm
aware, right? I know.
Yeah, I'm aware. Right. I'm your father. I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Yeshua also
respect that.
Right. Gives kavod to his ancestor, Yosef.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Practical lesson.
Their stature. When Yaakov
to appreciate their stature. Mm-hmm.
When he moves his hands, mm-hmm. like he knows what he's doing.
Right. When Yaakov Avinu moves his hands, he knows what he's doing. Right. Mm-hmm. We can't just think it's somebody moving their hand around. There's a whole world behind it. Right.
And when he moves his hand. Like, he's in command of the, like, almost the world.
Right.
I mean, the sun, the malach, I mean, you know. So it's not a small thing to take any issue with the way Yaakov Avinu was moving his hand.
Right. You could say to us, Yodati, Yodati, right?
But I think just in terms of us, that, you know, we also have that we have that ability to put meaning into our movements, however slight.
Very good.
Right.
To try and put meaning into our own movements as well and make sure that they have tocha into it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Mrs. Tran, please.
Isn't Yaakov being held accountable on a certain level for creating
with the Ksonas passing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a level of culpability there. Lefi Madre Gaso, creating that kina. Yeah. And he judged. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So that maybe is what's behind
part of that as well. Mm-hmm. Yosef experienced the result of that, you know. Yeah, please, Dory.
And then the other mention how strong Yosef's reaction was.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because
very good,
he
right.
knows the ramifications of such a thing.
Very good.
He's like pushing it.
That fits in very well, I thought. He experienced that.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, I want to wish everybody a wonderful winter, a warm winter, Bezras Hashem. And we are going to continue learning Midrash next semester as well. We'll just keep going through the Torah and the Midrash, and when we get closer to Purim, we'll do a couple of Midrashim that are Purim-related, Bezras Hashem. Mm-hmm. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Two. Call two. Thank you. Thanks, Gail.